This week, TikTok found a new debate to obsess over after a viral video showed a couple arguing about porn. In relationships, the girlfriend called it weird, gross, and basically a form of cheating. The boyfriend admitted he watches it occasionally. And within hours, the internet courtroom was in session.
Whoever needs to hear this, if your man is watching porn while you're in a relationship with him, it is considered cheating. Let me explain why. First off, it is so unattractive. If you really take down and dissect when a man watches porn, what it actually means. It means one, he's getting off to another woman that's not you. Number two, he doesn't have enough self-control to control his wiener to be able to be like, you know what? I respect my girl enough and I respect myself enough to not be doing this, putting myself in a position to potentially hurt the girl that I'm with. And just like if you really think about the act of getting off to another woman, it is so lustful, it is so sexual, it is so physical, and it takes away the intimacy that you have with your partner.
It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. So some people, right, said that watching porn while in a relationship is outright betrayal. Others said policing a partner's private habits, it's unrealistic and it's controlling. But as with most things on the internet, this debate has become part of a much bigger trend because over the last few years, social media has become flooded with these unofficial relationship rules, from the orange peel theory to the bird theory to if he wanted to, he would, to would you still love me if I was a worm? Yeah. More on those later. Well, today we are joined by David Kavanagh, who's a family psychotherapist specialising in porn addiction. But first, we are joined by Tessa Njunku. Tessa, you are very welcome to the programme. Look, I'm going to start here by saying I am 44 years of age. I do have social channels. I am on TikTok. But dating talk channel, this is new to me, but it is not new to you.
No, not at all. I mean, dating talk is one of the biggest platforms on TikTok. You know, there's so much there and we could spend hours talking about it. But dating talk is, you know, it's not new. It's been around since, I want to say, since the creation of the app and since it really kicked off during the pandemic. And what it is really is where people give advice on how to date.
Like what kind of advice?
Well, it really depends. I mean, I think what dating talk is really defined by is like kind of how black and white it is. So it'll be things like the 3-month challenge, which is, you know, say you start dating someone in September. By the end of December, you should know where you stand. And if you don't, it means that this person is not worth your time and you're better off leaving while you can.
And who's giving this advice? Who's doling out this information?
Well, you know, it really depends. Either it's people who have been through it and are, you know, have lived to tell the tale, or it's so-called relationship experts. So you have people like, you know, there's this creator called Anwar White, who has made it his whole mission to teach girls how to date successfully. So he has millions of followers and he'll give us, you know, tips on, you know, how to tell if a man is wasting your time, how to make him nervous so he's obsessed with you, things like that.
And honestly, do you find it useful?
No, not at all. I find it...
Love your honesty, Tessa. But do you follow it and watch it and engage with it?
I do, because, you know, especially when I was younger, like I'm 25 now, and like when I was just getting into the dating arena, it was the only point of reference I really had between that and my friends. So, you know, you'd go on TikTok if you had any sort of relationship woes and you'd be like, what do I do? And you'd have all this at your disposal. So it's easy to follow it. But, you know, the danger with that is it's a lot of opinion and you hear it so much because it's all over your algorithm that it kind of transfers to a different part of your brain. You start to think of it as truth. And that's when I think things get a little bit difficult.
And I spoke in the introduction there about these unofficial relationship rules. And I say that in quotation marks. So bring me through some of these, to me, feel kind of weird online dating trends, like orange peel theory, bird theory, worm theory, what?
The orange peel theory basically describes when your partner does an act of service for you that's something that you are perfectly capable of doing on your own. And this is for really small stuff, like, for example, peeling an orange. Let's say that for whatever reason, I hate peeling my oranges, but I really like oranges.
Coming right up, how you want it? Freshly squeezed, you want it sliced in half, or you want a bunch of mini oranges running around?
But I don't feel like peeling it.
I'll peel it for you, I'll cut it for you, I'll saute it.
Yeah, so they have kind of random names, but the orange peel theory is a really interesting one. You know, the goal of that one is to kind of ascertain whether or not your partner is willing to do things for you, you know, out of nowhere. And it kind of lets you gauge how much they care about you and how much they're willing to put themselves on the line for you. So the orange peel theory, what you're meant to do is with little to no context, you're meant to, you know, bring an orange to your partner and be like, can you peel this for me? Very casually, very nonchalantly. And, you know, they have a variety of options of how they should behave, but there is a right and wrong answer. And the right answer is they should just peel it and they shouldn't really ask questions about it. If they do, it's a bit of a red flag and you should probably break up with them.
Oh, and that's what you need to do. That's a consequence. Over, no second chances.
Well, you know, it depends what the court of TikTok has to say about it. But usually when you're reading the comment section, it's a red flag and, you know, you have 30 minutes to get out of that situation if you know what's good for you.
Okay, you see, I actually like that one, right? I actually do believe in that because to me, the greatest test of a partner is if you say, you would make us a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And they just put on the kettle for you and deliver it. No questions asked. Mm-hmm. Not can you do it yourself? Not why do you need it? Or your legs? I just want somebody to say, yeah, no problem. And that to me is actually one of the best things a partner can do. Okay, so we like that. Let's move on. Worm theory.
Would you still love me if I was a worm?
What?
Would you still love me if I was a worm?
Why would you be a worm?
What if I just magically just one day become a worm? Like, what if...
You don't just turn into worms.
Okay, but if we were soulmates, would you still...
No, see, we wouldn't... No, we wouldn't know each other if you were a worm.
Why not?
Because I'm not just introducing myself to worms. I'm not going to go to a bar and just ignore all the hot girls there and be like, oh, hold on a second. There's a hot-ass worm in the corner. Let me go get a piece of that.
So what are you saying? You think other girls are hot?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I don't think worms are hot.
Yeah,
so my eyes aren't looking at
do.
The worm in the
sure
corner.
Sure you do. Okay.
It's not like I can bang a worm. You know, I'm not making sweet love to a worm.
Oh, okay. So you really care about me for sex. That's all you,
about. No, now you're putting worms. I mean, you're putting words in my mouth, okay?
Worm theory. So this one is a little bit dated, actually. And now it's used a bit more ironically. But back in the day, I'd say in the 2010s, the worm theory is, would you still love me if I was a worm? So if I was struck down by some sort of, you know, witchcraft and I became a worm, how would you take care of me? Would you still love me the same? And obviously, you know, it's kind of become a stereotype that, you know, insecure girlfriends would ask us to do their partners. And this one is a little bit more nebulous in terms of what is the right and wrong answer. But I think the right answer would be, I would still love you and I would try to take care of you as a worm. But obviously now it's less of, you know, it's less of a deal breaker because we all kind of understand that it's a bit absurd. But in the 2010s, it was huge.
Okay, want to ask when I go home this evening, the bird theory.
It starts with a simple statement.
I forgot to tell you, I saw a bird yesterday.
One line, thousands of people are now trying out on their partners and recording their reactions on social media.
I saw a bird today.
Because what they say or don't say can mean a lot.
Now, the bird theory, that one I tried to trace back because it was actually based on the grandmother. So someone's grandmother on TikTok, she'd explained that when her grandmother was dating her grandfather, she would point out random things in town when they were on strolls. So one thing she pointed out was a group of birds. And he was really interested in that. You know, he followed along with the joke. He really leaned into his wife's whimsy. And what this creator is saying is that if you have a partner who can't kind of fall into that whimsy with you, you're probably not on the same wavelength and you're better off not really wasting your time with this person. So if you point a bird out and be like, wow, look how great this bird looks. It could be a common pigeon. But if they don't lean into that with you, they're probably not the one.
So how big are these videos? I mean, how much traction do they get? How much are these theories part of conversations among that younger generation and their dating lives?
I mean, I'd say that they're huge on dating platforms. When I'm looking through the comments section, even just the amount of likes, like I saw one lately about, you know, a new dating curriculum and how 2026 is the year of being strict in dating. And there were about 15 rules of what to do and what not to do. And I mean, the comments section is, you know, it's swarmed by, you know, younger women being like, yes, absolutely. I'm not strict enough. I need to do more of this. You know,
this reminds me of a book my sister bought when we were in our early 20s. Why Men Love Bitches.
Yes.
Am I allowed to say that word in a podcast? It's a Friday and it's going to be a heatwave. Yes, I think I am. Okay, so look, that theory is not anything new. Let's move to porn because that was the catalyst, was that conversation for all of this debate online this week. How influential do you think is porn as an early reference point for sex, particularly for young people?
I mean, I think it's huge. I think, you know, one of the first, you know, big high-profile celebrities in young Hollywood to pinpoint that was Billie Eilish. You know, she was very honest about the fact that she was exposed to pornography very young. I think she was between the ages of 8 and 10. And she, you know, said that not only she was exposed to it, but she would kind of seek it out. And what she explained is that, you know, it completely destroyed her brain, but also that she didn't understand that it was wrong. And I think that that's really the crux, is that when that's your only point of reference, because the sex education that you're receiving elsewhere just isn't up to par, you really end up believing that that's what life is. And then when that translates into your real life, when you do start being intimate with people, it's really dangerous.
So you're saying even now that young people aren't fully aware that what they are seeing when they're watching porn, which is so readily available, isn't realistic.
Yeah, I think not only sometimes do some people not realize, but also some people just don't care. I mean, I've had so many conversations with, you know, women in my age group who have had, you know, kind of intimate kind of moments and things have happened to them and they flagged that that wasn't appropriate. And, you know, the excuse would be, oh, but I saw that in this. Therefore, I think that it's right. So it's such a part of, I think, kind of our social sexual discourse. And it's hard to untangle from what's real and what's not.
For women, for young women in particular, how is porn now being received?
I think that's a really interesting question because when I was growing up, you know, I'd say like, you know, in the 2010s and stuff, the consensus at school at least was that boys would watch pornography and they would like it and that young girls wouldn't and that they would hate it. And so not only was that such a huge overgeneralization, but you already saw kind of gender roles around sex be crystallized in that moment.
And it doesn't say to me that our views on that have evolved since when I grew up in the 80s and 90s when the viewpoint in porn was exactly the same.
Exactly. So we're really not moving the needle much.
Is there a huge market now for women-made pornography?
Oh, there is. It's massive. You know, when I think about it, it's like, I think in January this year, there was this massive hockey show called Heated Rivalry. And this, you know, American female-led, female-owned brand called Quinn, which is Audio Erotica, brought the co-stars on the show and had them narrate some, you know, stories. And I mean, it exploded their downloads and like the amount of like people coming into the app. And they've had some really high-profile guests on it. I think Andrew Scott did an episode as well. But it's huge. It's a huge market. And it's just something that when it comes to female-led pornography, it's packaged so differently. Like, it's really just completely different. You have, I think, apps like Belessa as well that's female-led and female-owned. It's completely different, just the way that I think sex is depicted. So it places women and pleasure at the center, and I think that's more enticing to women today.
What are your thoughts on debates like this, the one that we saw this week over porn and whether it constitutes cheating within a relationship, or indeed these trends?
I think conversations like this, they're kind of, you know, they're very much, I feel like they're time capsules of our time. Like, they give us such a good outlook on what society has to say about, you know, marriage, sex, dating. And those are such key pillars of our society, so we definitely should talk about it. I think in some sense, sometimes these debates can be a bit sterile because what tends to happen is they exist within an echo chamber. You know, I was talking about this with a friend of mine who's a straight man in his mid-20s, and he was like, I have no idea what any of these dating concepts are. So what tends to happen is that they only exist on the algorithm of women like me. So women in their mid-20s. And when I was having any sort of like relationship woes, it would also come up on my algorithm as well. So what's happening is that it's just kind of feeding itself and it's not falling into the ears of who you think it should be for. So I think there just isn't a consensus for things like this. No one would have the same answer. So while I do think it's good to talk about it, I think it's also more important to kind of listen and be open to different opinions because human connection is such a complex issue. You can't solve it, you know, in a black and white way.
Tessa Njoku, always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we are also joined on News Talk Daily today by David Kavanagh. David, let's just start with the, I suppose, issue at the centre of this particular online controversy, and that is whether or not porn can be automatically considered cheating if you are in a relationship. From a therapeutic perspective, what's your point of view?
It's a bit of a grey area, Ciara, to be honest, because, you know, a lot of guys presume that because they've been watching porn as single people, that it's okay to continue watching porn in relationships. So I would suggest that, you know, as soon as you start dating somebody, that women should really kind of check in with their partners and say, look, I have thoughts about pornography. I want to just check in with you in relation to what your thoughts are. And if you as a woman think pornography is cheating, then you have a right to say that and to express that to your partner. And, you know, if he agrees that, you know, him continuing to watch pornography while in a relationship with you is inappropriate because it is a form of sexual arousal that's, you know, outside of the relationship and it's not really healthy for men to do that, in fairness, then, you know, if after that agreement has been made, he is found to be watching pornography afterwards, then that then could be constituted as inappropriate cheating. But technically speaking, it's not, you know, in terms of definitions, it's not technically a form of cheating, but because it's a norm that you've established and agreed upon that has now been breached by that individual, it's not okay in that sense.
How important is it for a man, if he has watched porn as a single man, to bring that aspect of his life to a new relationship? Should he also be upfront and honest with a new partner to say, look, this is something I do, this is something I watch, this is something I enjoy?
He can do, but a lot of men tend not to because they are actually quite ashamed of it. So, you know, it's funny, in the last 20 odd years, we've had this normalization of pornography. Yet the men I'm talking to in my practice, they're telling me that they're absolutely mortified and ashamed of the fact that they watch pornography. And when they tell their friends that they watch pornography, their friends are kind of, you know, agree that, yeah, we watch it too, but it's not something we want to be telling our partners about because there's this sense of we should not be doing this. So there's a kind of a double standard almost, in the sense that it's society kind of expects men to do it, but at the same time, men themselves feel bad for the fact that they're doing it. So
what do they feel bad about? Do they feel bad that they have these, you know, private fantasies around porn? Do they feel bad about the secrecy element of it? Do they feel it's a betrayal of their partner, or what is it? Or is it actually just the porn itself?
It's the fact that, like, so if a man is single and he's watching pornography, then it's the very fact that he is getting aroused from looking at people having sex. It's not something that you want to be telling your friends about. So, yeah, again, it's normalized. People do it. But there's a huge amount of shame around it. And, you know, it's illegal for us as individuals to be looking at people having sex. It's called voyeurism. So, you know, that's an illegal act and you can be, you know, charged for that. But yet we facilitate people watching pornography, which is just sex on screen. So, again, society has double standards around that. But the average single man doesn't want to be telling his partner that he watches pornography regularly because he's full of guilt and shame. I don't think men think it's a good idea, really, deep down. I don't think men believe this is a positive aspect of their lives. Not really.
Does that apply to younger men and indeed younger couples? Or are they approaching porn in a different way to previous generations?
I think it is more of a pressure on younger couples to believe that pornography is helpful or is in some way educational or is in some way just a form of entertainment. I think there's a societal norm around that. But the reality is, like, the women that I'm meeting that are in their early 20s, whose partners, you know, are watching pornography, they're devastated. They are shocked. They are traumatized to know that he is being aroused by looking at other women. It's a terrible form of betrayal. It damages their self-esteem. It destroys their relationship. And it makes communication between them around sexual intimacy almost impossible, because there's this elephant in the room of why is he doing this? Why, like, am I not good enough? Are we as a couple not good enough as in terms of physical intimacy that he needs to get this arousal elsewhere? It's an awful thing. So I don't know that there are that many positives to watching pornography. But yeah, younger couples, I think, are just under more pressure to believe it's normal.
Let's talk about these online platforms that discuss relationships. Tessa there was talking about Dating Talk, which is one of the biggest platforms on TikTok, where they discuss all aspects of being in a relationship. What do you make of those?
I think they have their place. I mean, I don't follow them, so I don't want to be speaking out of turn, but I think they can be educational to a certain extent. But then you have to remember, these are platforms and these are influencers are looking for likes and looking for as much attention grabbing headlines as possible, because that's how the algorithms work. So I think we need to take their advice or their suggestions a little bit more with a pinch of salt than we do as a fact that we should be practicing within our relationships. Because a lot of times men are blindsided when their partners do stuff or ask questions or kind of set them up for little traps to see if they're committed to them or not, because they've watched a TikTok reel and they're following an influencer's ideas and suggestions. And, like, us guys wouldn't have a clue what's going on. So then if we get hit with the, oh, you don't really love me because you didn't do X, Y, and Z. Sorry, what just happened here? Like, that stuff is very unhelpful, in fairness.
Do you worry then that people are learning about relationships and that they're setting their boundaries based on what they see in that space, that often really polarized space that is online?
Yeah, I think it's unhelpful in that regard. But, like, you kind of have to have a good peer group of friends within which to bounce your ideas off as well. I think that's a really important piece that might be missing from, you know, the online discourse, because influencers don't really suggest, as far as I can see, they don't suggest that people, that their followers should touch base with their own friends and just check in with, like, what do your parents think? What do your family and, you know, family and your, what do your social groups think of these ideas? It's all about follow my concept, follow my, my suggestions, and then you'll be, you know, you'll be in a better relationship. Whereas I think just talk to your friends, like, is this a good idea? Do you guys do this? Because that, the wisdom of the crowd, I think, is a very important aspect in terms of determining what is healthy in relationships, not just what's online. That's just kind of a curated version that's designed to get as many clicks as possible. So it's not really all that helpful.
Tessa and David, thank you so much for speaking to us here today on News Talk Daily. I would love to hear from listeners at home on this. Get in touch. You can contact me on Instagram at @OfficialKiraD. I will treat it confidentially. I'd love to know if you have fallen victim to these trends. Do you find them helpful? Do you feel that porn has become a really toxic part of your relationship? Do you see it as cheating? Would love to hear from you. You can always email newstalkdaily@newstalk.com too. Okay, we're going to leave it there. Until Monday morning, thanks for your company this week. Take care. Bye-bye.